Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. Today is for the birds. We welcome Rich Guthrie for the first time in 2013. He will be here to answer your bird questions and, you know, take your bird comments, maybe make a few bird calls. It's all in good fun. Rich is over the phone today. So we will, it should work out okay. Rich is a veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas bird count in years past for the National Audubon Society. Lots of calls are our tradition when Rich is on. So get in line early. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. You can also comment on Vox Pop page of our website. That's WAMC.org. Or you can check in on Vox Pop at Facebook. Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Or you could tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. Oh, look at the time. The show's over. I've done all the promos. No, we still have some time. Rich Guthrie, are you there, sir?
Here I am. Hello, Ray.
Welcome. Nice to have you here, or almost here.
Well, I'm glad to be here, in a sense.
All right. Well, you're probably traveling around looking at birds somewhere, yes?
I wish I were, but I am traveling around. I'm in New York State. I'm down in White Plains, New York.
Okay, well, the connection is good, and what's new in the bird world?
Lots of things. First of all, you know, it's kind of a tricky day out there today. Beautiful sunshine, and this mild weather we're having for the middle of January. It should be cold and brutal, but it's not. It's nice and friendly out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the birds have taken advantage of that. The open field birds, well, they actually rely on a little bit of snow to keep things going for them. So what snow is there is good for them. So a lot of winter birds are in town. A lot of unusual birds have been seen around the area. And, of course, people's bird feeders have been busy, those that are keeping the bird feeders going.
Yeah.
Some people are, you know, maybe taking a little bit of time out on the bird feeders because of the mild weather, but my advice is keep them going, keep the birds coming.
Now, you mentioned you're downstate. Is there a noticeable difference in the number or a variation on the species that you'll see as opposed to, say, someone in Saratoga might see?
Yes, there is. There are a notable number of northern birds that have made their way into New York State for the winter.
Yeah.
And some of them have proceeded, leapfrogged over our listening area, down into Long Island and down into New Jersey and perhaps beyond into Virginia. And others have surged into New York and have put on the brakes right around Saratoga.
Okay.
And said, okay, this will work.
All right, fair enough. Well, we have several calls already, Rich, so are you ready to take some calls via the telephone?
Ready, let's go.
All right, here we go.
Sir.
Let's kick it off. 800-348-2551 is our number, 1-800-348-2551. We start today with Richard in Queensbury. Richard, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Okay, what's the latest on the ivory-billed woodpecker?
Ah, good question. And it's a funny thing. I was just talking with a couple of folks over the weekend about the about that very topic, the ivory-billed woodpecker. For those who may not be familiar, is a magnificent bird found in the big swamps of the South. And unfortunately, the population and numbers have been decimated for a variety of reasons to the point where they were to the edge of extinction. And there are those who believe that they've crossed over that edge and are extinct. There's no coming back from extinction. There were reports of a few sighted in Arkansas,
uh-huh,
and some other evidence that they might be in South Carolina and the big swamps, the big cypress swamps of Florida.
Yeah.
You definitely saw one in Florida, didn't you?
I was in Arkansas, and I definitely saw one. That was a couple of years ago.
But some people don't believe you, right, Rich?
Well, you know, and I don't blame them. But you know, I hate to use a phrase that I hear quite often is I know what I saw.
Okay.
But that's not convincing to the skeptics and the doubters.
Right.
Bottom line is that I definitely did encounter an ivory-billed woodpecker in Arkansas as part of a team looking for the presence of them, the evidence of them.
Okay.
And the latest on them is, well, I'm not very optimistic about their ability to have made it through. There were a number of them, so few of them, and it's such a tenuous hold they have on existence that a number of bad things might have could have happened and pushed them over the edge, or they are so reclusive, and I will emphasize that, that they may just simply have been evading observation over the recent years. So the answer to your question is, I don't know.
All right, Richard, thanks a lot.
Still not been any. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just thanking Richard. Not you, Richard. You go ahead, Richard. I was thanking Richard in Queensbury. Continue.
Okay, well, bottom line is that there has not been, and there still has not been, any hard, unequivocal evidence that they still exist.
Okay, very good.
And that's the dilemma that we're facing right now. I wish them all the best. From what I saw, it's awe-inspiring to see this magnificent bird in the wild, and I wish more people can have that opportunity.
All right, 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. One open line if you want to talk to Rich Guthrie and compare bird notes. Also, Rich, you may remember our producer, Pat Donges. He's here right now.
Hi, Rich.
Yes, of course. Hello, Patrick.
We have some social media things to share with you.
We have some Facebook comments here. Robert on Facebook said, I observed a number of cardinals at our feeding station this winter, numerous males feeding next to each other, but the females would not tolerate the presence of other females. What gives? During the spring and summer, we only see pairs who chase away rivals.
Ooh.
Well, during spring and summer, territoriality is very important among so many of our bird species. The majority of them are territorial. There are those that are communal or colonial in nature, where they'll tolerate a number of birds in the same vicinity. But most birds defend a defined territory. The definition is up to them.
But the women don't get along.
They don't get along. Then they need to exclude rivals and competitions away.
Okay.
But during the winter. Right now, they should be, everybody should be okay, getting along okay.
And, interesting. So an anomaly, perhaps.
I think so, because many times I'll come across groups of cardinals in the winter that will be a mixed bag of males and females, and there doesn't seem to be any kind of competition or rivalry amongst either of that group. So I think it was probably just observational anomaly.
Okay, fair enough. Right. Now you have one more, Patrick?
Rich, I've got one more from Facebook. Domenico says, I have a second-floor patio open only on one side, and there is a bat attached near the ceiling on one of the side walls. I noticed him there at some point in November and have left him alone because I'm guessing he is in some sort of state of hibernation. His position on the side wall has not changed. I know for a fact we have bats in our roof that come out every night in the warmer months, but I've never seen a bat just rest out in the semi-open like this. Do you think he is ill? Should I have him removed? He isn't bothering us in any way, so I'm fine with leaving him there. It is a dark brown, small, could fit in a cupped hand, no movement, bat, and no movement the few times they went outside on to shake out a blanket or rug.
Well, now, a bat is not technically a bird,
no,
right?
No, but we're asking Rich to be a Batman.
No. All right, Batman. Go ahead.
Yes, Birdman to Batman. First of all, it's probably a little brown bat, and they do overwinter in hibernate in our areas, and oftentimes in attics and roofs and behind shutters and in sheltered places. That one should be out in the open this time of year is a little bit unnerving. It's a little upsetting. The brown bats and other hibernating bats have been afflicted with this white nose syndrome, which is unfortunately fatal to the bat.
Right, we've done a lot of reporting on that. Yeah.
Yes, that's correct. Fortunately, there has been a few isolated populations of bats that have so far not been exposed to that syndrome.
Okay.
And we our fingers are crossed that those can perpetuate the population and perhaps develop a level of immunity, but we don't know that that's the case yet. Now, with regard to this particular bat, there are specialists who would be very interested to hear about it, and I didn't get the location of the observer, but...
We didn't either, but if he's listening, then he should be able to call that in. So who should he get in touch with, DEC?
New York State DEC, if it's in Massachusetts, then Environmental Protection, and they will want to know. They have endangered species specialists, and they're very concerned about the status of bats of all types.
All right.
So I would forward that information on to them.
All right, will do.
More expert advice.
Thank you, Rich.
Rich Guthrie is our guest.
Sure.
Patrick Donjas is our producer. Patrick, we will talk to you soon, I guess,
sure
if anybody
thing.
Else wants to tweet us or hit our Facebook page or... go to the Vox Pop page on the WAMC website. That's WAMC.org. And we have many callers. That's the old-fashioned way to do it. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll get to you on the line coming up.
Support comes from Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. St. George's School, Clifton Park, New York, offering an open house on Saturday, February 9th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. for their all-day pre-K and after-school enrichment program. GeorgeCP.org. Springfield Museums, presenting the John F. Kennedy Experience, pictures and memorabilia from JFK's personal and political life. Wood Museum of Springfield History, springfieldmuseums.org. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working to permanently preserve the natural, scenic, and recreational resources of the Lake George region since 1988. LGLC.org.
one 800 348 2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop. Rich Guthrie is our guest. He is the bird expert that we like to bring here once every month or so. And I think we missed you in were you here in December, Rich?
No, we had I don't recall what the incident was, but not there.
Yeah. Well, you're here now. Nice to have you here, even
here
if it's
we are.
Over the phone. We go to Mona in Albany. Mona, you're on.
Oh, hi. I'm just curious about something I saw at the Alcove Reservoir this summer. There were two swans, beautiful white swans, and then they had babies.
Hmm.
And I watched the little babies follow the mommy around. Apparently the daddy flew away because just the mommy and the two babies following the swan. And then later this fall, the mommy flew away, and then there were just the two now kind of buff-colored and larger. And then, to my utter dismay, one day they were gone. Now I'm wondering if they'll come back to the Alcove Reservoir again.
Oh, Rich?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, what do you think? Did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes, I did. And first of all, I'm surprised that the male disappeared. With geese and swans, there's a big difference between ducks and geese and swans. With the ducks, as soon as the female is incubating the eggs, the guys disappear. They're gone. They're out of town. But with swans and geese, the males stay around and vigorously defend the nest site and their mate and also their offspring. That he took off or is not around is probably not a good sign. It's unusual that he wouldn't be there. With respect to the adults leaving, well, they better leave because the alcove and other water bodies will freeze up, and swans mm-hmm. don't do well in frozen water. The adults probably had a good instinctive motivation to get out of town, and the youngs maybe didn't get the message.
Well, they did leave eventually, but the mother left sooner. One day I drove by, there was just the two were there, and they were very tan-looking instead of pure white. And then
right.
one day later on, then they haven't been there ever since. So do you think they'll come back to the same place next year?
It's very likely that they will. They're very when they do find a good nesting location, it's a good time idea that they'll be back in town again. So, yeah, I think they'll be home.
Okay.
They were so beautiful. I had never seen a swan there ever before, so it was so beautiful. And then you can't stop, you know, and stare because it's the reservoir, so you have to just keep on driving.
That's right.
Mona, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yep. You're quite welcome. And just a little further on that, those are most likely the mute swan.
Okay.
That is not native to the area. They were introduced as ornamental birds way back in the Victorian era and have since gone wild and have expanded their distribution, their range, into our area over the 100-and-some-odd years. And so now they're sporadically found in our area, but many of them still haven't gotten the word, being as that they're from a milder climate.
Yeah.
Originally, they don't get it that they should leave come winter.
Now, Mona mentioned that the daddy swan suddenly was not around, and you would suspect foul play, if you pardon the.
Yes, it's not natural that he shouldn't be around, and foul play.
What predators, Rich? What predators are common?
An adult swan is pretty immune to predation.
Yeah.
There's not much around that will go after him, so it may have been some natural causes that might have caused his problems.
Okay, Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's our bird show on Vox Pop. One open line, 1-800-348-2551, that number. If you get a busy signal, keep trying. We'll try to get you in there. Dave in Western Mass is on. Dave.
Hi, Rich. My question is about flocks of birds. I've seen pigeons do this and also starlings, I think, but they'll be swooping and diving and turning, and they all seem to be doing it in unison. And first of all, why do they do it? Are they just out having a good time? And secondly, is there any explanation as to how they manage to stay together like that? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, great. That's a good question. And the answer is we really don't know. But there is that's kind of a glib answer. There are some interesting aspects to this business of flocking and this tight formation flying that birds have, as opposed to, let's say, the high-flying movement of the geese, which follow a line or a pattern. The flocking is more or less, I think, designed to confuse a predator, a hawk that might find a single bird easy pickings. A tight group of birds forms a mass that may be a bit overwhelming for the hawk.
Mm.
And in fact, the starlings that you mentioned do form up in a tight ball, an aerial ball, of maybe a cluster of 100 or so birds in a tight formation, and will fly above and just behind a hawk. So if you see a group of a tight cloud of birds like that, take a close look and you'll probably see a hawk somehow trying to get away from this swarm that's behind them. It's not that they'll do him any harm, but it's just a little intimidating, even for a predator, a hawk of that sort.
Yeah, you know, I've seen that. It's quite something to see.
Oh, it's beautiful. To watch them in motion, it is absolutely astounding. Now, how they synchronize their movements is there's where the mystery comes in. And slow motion video of the flock in flight will show that there is a subtle signal given by one individual or a small group of the individuals that the others pick up on and immediately follow, all in the blink of an eye, faster than we can observe through our observations. But in slow motion, you could see it. It's actually a trigger that turns the flock in a unison, and then back again, and then another signal that sends them in another direction. And this is almost orchestrated. It's almost like they've been rehearsing these dance moves and have them all down pat. But it's not that, you know. Sandpipers are also like that. If you're ever down on the shore and you see a flock of sandpipers, they're dark above and light below. And when they go through this synchronous flock movement, you'll see them turn from black to white to black to white to light to dark.
It's
totally bedazzling.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. Go ahead, Rich. It's a little tough to do the show over the phone. Yeah, I was just going to say our Patrick Donjas, our producer, is back in with a couple more questions for you from social media, and then we'll get back to the phones.
Hi, Ray.
Oh, your microphone's not on. Here, try this one.
Well, hold on.
All right, you know what?
Here we go.
Oh, here we go.
Welcome to radio. Marsha on Facebook, this show is becoming quite popular on social media, by the way. Marsha on Facebook says, I noticed the finches stayed very late this year into December. Is this normal?
Yes, it's normal. It depends on the type of finch. The house finches, which are that little reddish guy, the male that has that little patch of rose-colored red about the head and the female sparrow-like striping, they will stay around throughout the winter. So the other finches, such as the indigo buntings and the goldfinches and the like, well, the indigo buntings leave town. The goldfinches stay around. I will add that there's been a shortage of natural foods out there, particularly with the berries, probably brought on by the drought earlier this year. So okay. there's a food shortage, and the birds will probably be coming to the bird feeders sooner and more often than they would ordinarily.
Huh. Okay. Here's from Amanda on WAMC.org. I have an 18-acre piece of property around my home in Columbia County, partly wooded, partly open fields, and I've been thrilled to hear more owls in my woods this year. What can I do to support and encourage owls? I know barn owls are on the decline from loss of traditional open barns. Are there houses I can build? Any tips are appreciated. I already avoid using pesticides or herbicides, which seems to have helped the populations of smaller birds. I'm hoping that it's also helping the owls. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And yes, as mentioned, the barn owl, B-A-R-N, you know, the house for horses, has been declining over the years to the point where I don't know if there are any left in the Capital District or in a listening area. There may be, but they're so secretive that they're very hard to find. They're very nocturnal. Some of the other owls can be found during the daylight hours, but the barn owl, not, unless you happen to stumble on one in an open roost someplace. But their numbers have been declining. As far as nest boxes, the barred owl, B-A-R-R-E-D, the barred owl will occupy a nest box if you offer one out there. But they're more inclined to take a hollow tree limb and nest in that instead. But you're welcome to try it.
Okay.
There are nest box designs if you look them up on the internet. The great horned owl. Not so. They will use an old crow nest or an old red-tailed hawk nest and out there in the woods, and they're fairly common. And then the little screech owl, well, they're a delightful little owl that you'll use the equivalent of a wood duck nest box. So if you build a wood duck nest box and put a little carpeting of pine needles in there before you put it up in the on a tree and put it in the appropriate, even a backyard will be suitable for the screech owl. And the screech owl is one of my favorites. They're that little guy that lives in so many different places, in the city and in the country, in the barnyards, in the backyards, in the sanctuaries. They're more numerous than they would let on because they are nocturnal, but you can sometimes see them during the day. And they're one of my favorites
out
there.
So that's
good luck with that.
They're a good bet. All right, I got a double shot, last two from Barbara. On WAMC.org.
Okay.
I have two feeding stations on opposite sides of my house. In other words, I can see only one station at a time. Both sides have nearby wooded areas. I have one cardinal couple at each feeding station. Or do I? Might I have just one couple total who are zipping back and forth? I don't know how large a territory one cardinal couple may claim. And then this is the second question. Do you find red-bellied woodpeckers as difficult to differentiate from red flickers as I do? Thanks, Barbara.
Okay, let's do the commuting birds first.
Okay, the cardinals, unless you get their names, it's going to be hard to tell them apart.
Right.
Right, okay.
So, you know, we there are studies that will determine that by using bird banding and marking of by licensed scientific investigators, and that will help tell them apart. My suspicion is they're probably two separate pairs.
Okay.
And again, in the wintertime, political or the social boundaries of competing pairs disintegrate, and the birds tolerate each other in more proximity. Now, with respect to the red-bellied woodpecker, sure. But first of all, we don't have any red flickers in our area. Those are far west. They're found Rocky Mountains out to California and Oregon. The flickers that we have are the yellow-shafted flickers, and the best way to tell them is to look at the back of the red belly, so-called red belly. Forget about that. You never see that reddish part of the belly because they're all hugging the side of a tree.
Sure.
Yeah.
But the back is a zebra pattern, black and white, horizontal striping, and with a brilliant reddish crown to the head. So The flicker, on the other hand, has a red patch on the nape, on the back of the head, and a brown and black striped back, and a cream-colored belly rather than the white and red belly of the red the other woodpeckers.
But you wouldn't see them around here anyway.
No.
Either one you would, yes, absolutely.
Oh, either one you would.
I thought you said the flicker was not from around here.
Oh, the red flicker is from the west. The yellow-shafted flicker is around here, and they exit during the winter but come right back in the spring, and a few of them linger right through the winter.
All right.
The red-bellied woodpecker is the guy in town.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks,
hey,
Rich.
Thank you, Patrick Donjes, our producer, who is watching the social media here on the program. And Rich Guthrie is our guest. By the way, if you haven't had a chance, do check out Rich's blog. It is blog.timesunion.com/birding. It is, if you're interested in this sort of thing, it is one that you may want to bookmark. The phone number to call, by the way, is 800-348-2551. And back to the phones we go. Patrick in Delmar, you're on.
Hi, how are you there, Richard? Thanks for taking my call. You there?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir.
You know, when you turn 50, you're into gardens and birds, and that's what I do right now. But I can't seem to attract big birds at my feeder. I just get the little birds. I just wanted to know the best feed to give them to get a variety of birds.
Okay. Well, that's easy. The best feed that I can recommend for the larger birds, such as, well, it depends on what you mean by large. The mourning dove and the blue jay. And both like cracked corn. Cracked corn is a delightful food to put out there. It's also rather inexpensive, relatively inexpensive, compared to the other bird seeds that are available. And not only that, but the sparrows and cardinals and juncos also like cracked corn. Okay. So that'll keep a whole bunch of birds happy.
Right.
And if you want to get larger
than sunflower seeds, Rich?
Sunflower seeds.
Well, sunflower seed works well for a large variety of bird species. But I'll tell you something, if you put cracked corn and sunflower seed side by side, I've often found that the blue jays will head right for the cracked corn, same with the mourning doves. And, of course, if you have any turkeys in the neighborhood, cracked corn is on their menu, their preferred menu. So,
the blue jay seems to take over, though. I'm trying to get the cardinals and the other types of birds. The blue jays seem to
take over all the time. Yeah, in that case, what you want to do with them is put the sunflower seed in an elevated bird feeder, one with a platform on it. But then, it's kind of hard to tell the blue jays they're not welcome at your bird feeder. They feel entitled just as the cardinals do. And, hey, with a little snow on the ground, you'll have a red cardinal, the white snow, and a blue jay. So a very patriotic background, a setting for you there.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Patrick, thank you very much. Vox Pop is the program. Rich Guthrie is our guest, our first birding show of 2013. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. And Sharon and Glenn, you're on.
Oh, hi. I'm a first-time caller.
Nice to have you here.
Oh, thank you. I have a question about the geese, because I live on a knoll called Roman's Nose, so I have a great view of the west and a great view to the east, and the Mohawk Valley goes one way and the Schoharie Valley goes on the other side. And I was watching the geese a couple weeks ago. Huge formations. I mean, huge V's with little V's inside with arrows, and it was amazing. So that was enough to make me stop and just watch that. Well, as they went out of view to the east of me, they were coming from the northwest, and they were heading southeast, another V starts coming along. And I'm standing watching this huge formation with, like I said, little V's inside of big V's and arrows and all this stuff. Well, as the second formation starts to go out of view to the east, I see a third formation coming from the northwest, and the first formation had circled back around and was overlapping, going back the same way they had just come, all these huge Vs going in every direction.
Hmm.
I was just wondering if other people were seeing that kind of thing. And, I mean, I don't know about the polar shift, that kind of thing, but they looked like they didn't know which way to go. And it was, December. They should have been going, southeast.
Okay, so you're referring to the bird's use of the magnetic field. Is that correct?
Well, that's what I was wondering.
All right. Well, what do you think, Rich?
Not likely. I'm suspecting that what you were seeing were actually snow geese that were the last-minute migrants out of the high Arctic on their way down to the salty shores of the Chesapeake Bay and Virginia and beyond. So, and they are rather high-flying, long-distance migrants that form not that sharp V that we're familiar with from the Canada geese, but a wavy line that forms like a more of a U-shape with multiple components to it, a smaller formation inside a larger one. They were moving through just a little while ago as they were finally, things were freezing up solid up north, and they decided time to get south. What they were probably doing is they probably found a good cornfield with a lot of corn stubble, got their attention, and they might have been circling around to come in to feast on the cornfields for the night, spending the night there, maybe a day or two for the weather to improve, and then continuing their journey afterwards. I've been out that way, and it's a beautiful, the Schoharie Valley of New York is a beautiful area, and at times I've seen thousands, tens of thousands of snow geese gleaning remnants of the corn stubble that were out in these large open fields. Mm. So that's what comes to mind with respect to what you might have been seeing.
Well, that could be, because you're right. We have lots of cornfields, and I do see lots of geese, in, and it just amazed me to see the layers of, like you said, the intricate formation where you still had two huge formations heading southeast, and then the one formation coming back right. They looked like they were higher up than them now, going back northwest. It was just the strangest. I tried to take a picture, but, of course, that's when I didn't have anything to take a picture with.
Mm. Well, I'm with you there, because I think that those high-flying flights of snow geese and the Canada geese, when they're the long-distance migrants are going through, just spectacular. It's just a delightful thing to see. And it's a traditional part of the change of seasons, and something worth beholding.
Sharon, thanks for the call. We got to take a break here, but appreciate it very much. And we will take a short break and then back with more of your calls at 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, stand by. We'll be back with you in a moment.
Support comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, presenting exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. The Honest Weight Food Co-op in Albany, offering local and organic produce, natural groceries, artisan cheeses, and more. Honestweight.coop. And New York State Tobacco-Free Community Partners, working to help parents prevent and reduce youth smoking with prevention programs to counter tobacco marketing and help save lives. New York State Tobacco-Free Community Partners at smokefreecapital.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, the time 2:41, and Rich Guthrie is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the phone number. Well, look what the bird dragged in. It's Patrick Donges, our producer, with yet more from the social media. Go ahead, Mr. Donges.
Hi, Ray. Just one more for you here. Rocks of Egremont on WAMC.org says, I'd like to share an exciting sighting. A week ago on Route 22 in Austerlitz, New York, a bald eagle glided out of the trees and landed on the road in the lane opposite to me. There was no other traffic, so I slowed to a stop. It stayed there just moments and flapped back into the pines. It had a beautiful, bright white head and a bright white tail.
Wow. Rich, what do you think of that?
I think that's spectacular. And anytime I hear observations of bald eagles in our area, I am just so grateful that we were able to pull that bird out of the verge of biological extinction in the Northeast. And I think that was a story we can all be proud of and share in. You know, there was a time when bald eagles, I remember a time when I saw a bald eagle down by my house in Greene County. I called up a neighbor, a friend of mine, not a neighbor, distant, and he gathered up his neighbors and they all drove down to see it because it was such an unusual sight. And since then, since my colleagues at Environmental Conservation Department worked to bring the bald eagle back into the Northeast, the success that they've had, that we've had is just phenomenal. So, yeah, congratulations. I suspect that what that eagle was doing was there was probably some during the wintertime, eagles will come down and help themselves to any kind of carrion that they can find. It's a lot easier than trying to find fish out in the frozen
winter,
waters.
Right.
And they'll pick up on a roadkill or something.
Yeah.
So,
well, don't we all?
Puts them in a bit of peril.
Yeah.
So that it creates a bit of a risk zone for them. But that's probably what was going on there in Egmont.
Right.
Splendid. And thank you, Rich. Thank you, Patrick Donges.
Thank you,
if you want to check in on the Facebook, you can do that at WAMC Radio. You could tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. Or you could go to WAMC.org and go to the Vox Pop page and make your comment there. Or you could call us on the phone like Joe in Woodstock. Joe, you're on. Hello, Joe.
Yes?
Oh, is this not Joe?
This is Joe.
Oh, hello, Joe. How are you? You're on.
I'm fine.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a quick question.
Sure.
Okay. We've heard so much, at least in Woodstock, but in the general area, about the problem of bears not hibernating in their normal patterns, and that you shouldn't put bird feeders out at any time, but then Rich says put them out. So that's a quick question. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. All right. Very good. Rich?
Well, I know that bears have been postponing hibernation, but not not foregoing it. And on a day like today, being as it's so mild out there, I don't want to say that that a bear wouldn't get rousted up and wander around, but I think that will be the exception. So unless you know otherwise, unless you see any evidence otherwise, I would say right now it would be a safe time to be feeding birds, the bears notwithstanding. So go ahead and do it. I haven't heard of any bear sightings or footprints or scat being found around this time of year. So go for it. Like, feed the birds.
All right. Is there a way when bears are out and prevalent, is there a way to sort of keep the bears at bay or keep them away from your feeder?
Well, yeah, keeping the feeder out of reach of the bears is the safest, the surest way of doing that. And what I like to do is put the bird feeder on a clothesline and run it out there midway. And it also helps deter the squirrels from getting at the bird feeder.
Yes, but
birds
not completely.
Have no problem getting to it.
Yeah. All right, let's go
no,
back.
No, not completely. It take a lot more than that to thwart the squirrels.
Indeed. Let's go over to Lou in Altamont. Lou, you're on.
Howdy. Back to finches.
Okay.
Suddenly I have a flock of finches. I had goldfinch all summer. I had house finches all summer. And they never flocked. Now suddenly I have a flock, and it seems to be about 60, 70 birds, and it goes from one side of the house to the other looking for feed.
Okay.
Do I have a flock this time of the year?
Okay. They came in out of the north. And that's a good point, and I'm glad you brought it up. This has been a very unusual year with regard to goldfinches and their little cousins, the red poles, that are northern finches that will, on occasion, migrate in huge numbers into our area. And for many years, we'll suddenly have groups of 10, 50, 100 red poles coming to our bird feeders, and also on the wild seeds along the highway in open fields and birch catkins on the birch trees and the alders. So the red poles are joining the northern populations of goldfinches and increasing their numbers locally dramatically.
Hmm.
So I think that may be what you're seeing.
Where do they normally migrate to?
Well, they normally don't. They normally stay well north up in Canada, up in the Arctic, in the shrub fields of northern Canada, across to Alaska and Siberia. So ordinarily, they don't migrate out of the north and come down this far. But every now and then, there is a mechanism that triggers a mass movement of them, feathered lemmings, so to speak, and they just work their way down into our backyards and all the way down to the coast and further south.
When will they go back, Rich?
South.
When will they return?
They'll turn around in April.
Yeah?
They'll turn around in April and head back up again. But it's mainly food that drives them. And so I suspect if somebody were to look around up in northern Quebec and Labrador, they'll find that there may be a shortage of food up there, a natural food for these guys.
Okay. Lou, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Yep, we appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551, the number. It's Ralph's turn in Athol. Ralph, you're on.
Yes, hi. My question is a follow-up from an earlier question about the pigeons. And I'm glad you mentioned the hawks, too, because I've noticed that, you know, pigeons will be keeping their eye on the hawks, and that a lot of times is the reason that they're up and moving. But my question is around flocking in general, because this happens with ocean birds and shore birds, and especially the starlings will flock together, and they have that beautiful display that they'll do. But what is the communication between the birds that allows them to turn in such a way? Because I know there's not vocalization, and it's so instantaneous, so quickly they're able to move together. What allows them to do that?
Well, that's been a mystery up until the advent of a good quality video that you can study frame by frame, and some observers, some researchers have looked at that very topic and examined the pattern within that flock, and they've seen that there is a subtle signal, a motion signal given by one or two individuals, probably at the edge or the fringe of the group, that is instantaneously transmitted across the entire group. With respect to our time frame, it's instantaneous. With respect to their time frame, it's almost like a field call on a football field, where everybody gets the word and everybody moves in the same motion.
So is their sense of timing different from ours?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question, and that's something that I've been pondering for a long time. Because if you I believe there is. There, first of all, starting with their size and lifespan, their size and lifespan is so much quicker, smaller and quicker than ours, and I think their timing is relatively normal for them. We see as very rapid in our perspective, and then you get a larger critter such as elephants and whales, and you'll see that their time frame, their time perception, is different than ours, and they may regard us as scurrying around and rapidly communicating back and forth, and you get. Whereas they're going along at what they consider a normal pace, and we regard as lumbering. So, I think that that's a very interesting question. I love the sound of it, and just a little bit further, Ray, if you bear with me, if you take the sound of a thrush. An ordinary wood thrush or hermit thrush.
Yes, I've heard this.
Slow that down.
Oh.
Fascinating. But then if you compare it to the sound of the recordings of whales in the ocean, there's a very strong similarity between the quality and production of those sounds between the small bird and a huge mammal. And I think if you would, I think it's, you know, a different level of relativity amongst related to the size and lifespan of these critters.
Very interesting.
A little beyond my ability, but I love to hear and I love to think about it.
Ralph, thanks a lot for the call. It's almost like the way you describe it, the clock speed of a computer. In other words, some computers are overclocked and some are slower. And that's a really interesting concept. It's almost like we should have you on with Bob Berman and talk about the space-time continuum the next time, Rich.
You know what? There is so much in what you just said there, Ray, about the comparative speeds of our mutual existences is worth some serious thought.
Indeed. Well, let's go to Wayne and Lennox. Wayne, you're on.
Yes, my question regarding affiliated woodpeckers. Over the last 6 months, I've spotted on four separate occasions, two pileated woodpeckers in the neighborhood. I'm curious, what is their range? Would I expect to see them more often, or do they travel fairly large distances?
No, that group that you see now will be reduced to two in the near future because they are territorial. What I'm suspecting you're seeing is an expanded family group, and pretty soon the youngsters will get booted out of that territory if it's any good. Or the adults will move out and find a better place. So,
how large is the territory?
That I don't know. It depends on the quality of the habitat. It's all about food, and you could go to some areas and there'll be, I don't want to call them a cluster, but let's say a group of woodpeckers that will be more tightly associated, and another area where food and habitat may be scarcer. There may be just the one pair over of a larger area just to be able to sustain not only their own existence, but they have to be thinking about procreating and the welfare of the family that they're anticipating. So they'll it's all about food.
And they like hardwoods?
They're not particular. They'll even take deadwood. They'll take... I've seen just recently some woodpecker work on telephone poles, and you know there can't be that much food in a telephone pole. But that's pretty unusual with the treated poles that we have that there are out there now. But they'll go for hardwoods and softwoods, white pines and red pines and pitch pines. I'm not so sure about the pitch pine, but I know the white pine is one of their favorites, and they're in there. With gusto.
Wayne, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Susan in Great Barrington. Hi, Susan. You're on Vox Pop with Rich Guthrie.
Hi. This is sort of a coincidence because I was going to call you and tell you about two unusual birds that I have never seen before at my feeder.
Okay.
And I've had feeders for years, and they're the common redpoll, what you were talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand, but there's no flock. There's just two. Because you said there was going to be a flock.
Well, usually they're very social.
Mm-hmm. They're with the other finches, the gold finches and the purple finches. They're hanging with them, but there's only two of them.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Maybe they're just not very social redpoles.
So, will I expect them to stay around, or will they go back to Labrador, wherever they live?
Oh, they're out of town as soon as things clear up north.
Okay, it's a really pretty bird. I mean, in the whole time I've lived
here. Yeah. The red on the head of the red pole is an intense red.
Yes.
It's a ruby red. It's almost it's somewhat iridescent, and it has a little depth to it. It's almost like the looking at a ruby or a garnet ring, where you see the color come from the inside.
It's a beautiful bird, and it has that beautiful pink breast.
Yes, right.
It's really pretty.
Right.
And the other thing I wanted to mention is that I put out a bird feeder this year in an area where I haven't ever put it. I've taken it away because of the bears.
Mm.
We haven't seen a bear here in Great Barrington around our house, and we live near a woods for about a year and a half.
Huh.
So I don't know if maybe they're going someplace else. Hopefully.
No, they'll be back.
Yeah, thanks.
They'll be back.
Susan, thanks a lot for the call.
Have a
great day. Let's try to get another call in here, Rich. We'll go to Elaine in East Chatham, New York. Elaine, you're on.
Hi. I had a point about red poles as well, but I have about 15 of them. And I've lived here 10 years, and I've only seen them a couple of times, and she's right, a beautiful bird. The other thing I wanted to say was, in Great Barrington the other day, I saw this humongous flock of geese, and they were doing that swirling around. Of course, there's a lot of cornfields there. And the other thing is, I have a saw wet owl that sits out by my wood pile at night. And he is so lovely and wonderful and so little. And it just doesn't seem possible that an owl can be so small. I live alone, so I'm very excited about all these birds. I just love watching them. And I do have a dirge of blue jays this year. I live in the heavy woods. I have bear paw prints on my windows from last year that I didn't wash off because...
Oh, atta girl.
Right. I mean, he literally was looking in the window at me going, yo, where's the food?
Oh, boy.
Because I had left the feeder out toward the end of April, and he tore it down, and then he's wiping his paws on, and the cat was looking at him like, what the heck is that? And she's growling big and fierce, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, you got to be careful with that.
I know. Well, you know, and I usually don't leave the feeders out past, like, the 15th of April, but I just love watching the birds, and when you're alone, it's kind of a good thing to do, you know. I only have one pair of cardinals, a junk load of doves, and lots of squirrels, of course. But when you live in the deep woods, that's what you got, right?
Hey, Elaine, thank you for sharing with us. We're out of time. And Rich Guthrie, a splendid job here from a distance. You did great. The blog is blog.timesunion.com/birding. Perhaps next time, Rich, we can entice you to come into the studio.
I'd love to. You know I'd love to be there. So, Ray, I'm glad to chat with you, and thank you very much.
Hey, Happy New Year, man. We appreciate it very much. Thanks to everyone who called in. Sorry if you didn't make it in. Support comes from Don Muller Gallery, Northampton, Massachusetts, specializing in jewelry, custom designs, handcrafted glass, and gifts by American artists since 1978. Facebook and DonMullerGallery.com. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers, nature.org/Adirondacks. And Cafe Capriccio, featuring Chef Jim Rua's book, Cafe Capriccio's Chef's Table, online and at the Bookhouse in Albany, New York, cafecapriccio.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy for doing the controls. Our phones were answered by Sally Mayers and producer Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Moyers & Company at this time. On Monday, Medical Monday, it's end-of-life care issues with Dr. N. Michael Murphy, and Alan Chartok will be your host. Stay tuned now for a news update.